Imagine floating in low Earth orbit right now. You are hurtling blindly through the vacuum of space at, like, roughly 17,000 miles per hour.
Which is just a terrifying speed to even try and picture, honestly.
Right, and suddenly this $250,000 Chinese spacecraft just streaks past you, missing you by just 7 meters.
7 meters.
7 meters. In the vast, completely infinite expanse of space, two massive metal objects nearly collided, separated by basically the length of a pickup truck.
Yeah, that is, I mean, that's way too close for comfort.
And that terrifying near disaster actually happened yesterday. And it is just one tiny piece of this massive, totally invisible infrastructure war happening directly above our heads right now.
It really forces you to rethink what space actually looks like today. I mean, we always picture this empty void, right? But low Earth orbit is rapidly becoming one of the most crowded, heavily contested industrial zones on the planet. Or, well, off the planet.
Which brings us perfectly to our mission for today's deep dive. We are tearing into the June 29th, 2026 edition of the Ticket Morning Tech and Gaming Newsletter.
It's a dense one today, too.
Oh, it really is. And looking at all these sources, from the articles to the raw data, one theme just kept screaming at us: escalation and scale. We're looking at a single day where billions of dollars, thousands of satellites, and millions of gamers are violently colliding to shape the future of the digital world you live in. So, okay, let's unpack this, because we are absolutely not talking about incremental updates today.
No, far from it. Beneath all these seemingly disconnected headlines, rockets launching, massive silicon investments, video game characters dropping is a highly unified story.
Right.
It's really a story of infrastructure. It's about who builds the underlying pipes, who controls the hardware, and ultimately who dominates the physical and digital spaces we all occupy.
Yeah, so let's start with the physical space, specifically that near miss in orbit, because on June 28th, SpaceX launched 24 Starlink satellites.
The routine Tuesday for them at this point.
Literally. But that single launch pushed their active network past 10,700 satellites, over 10,000 active units up there, and they launched them using a Falcon 9 booster, specifically the B1088, on its 15th flight.
15th. That is just absurd for cost efficiency.
It's insane. And they are nearing profitability. They've got over 3 million subscribers, and they're massively boosting airline Wi-Fi satisfaction by, like, over 40% while totally dominating maritime communications.
Well, the economics of that booster reuse are the only reason any of this is possible. If you had to build a new rocket every single time you wanted to launch two dozen satellites, the math just fails immediately.
Oh, completely.
By treating that B1088 booster like an airplane that just needs refueling, they drop the cost of putting those $250,000 metal objects into space down to just a fraction of the historical average.
But wait, I have to push back on this unchecked optimism for a second. We're putting over 10,000 objects up there, and we just had a 7 meter near miss between Starlink and China's TNMU 115. Aren't we just creating a cosmic traffic jam?
It's a valid fear, for sure.
Because at those speeds, a collision creates a debris cloud that hits other satellites, which creates more debris. We are risking cutting ourselves off from space entirely.
Yeah, the Kessler syndrome. But if we connect this to the bigger picture, you see exactly why SpaceX is willing to risk that traffic jam. This isn't just about giving people faster internet so they can stream Netflix on a boat.
Right, it's bigger than that.
Exactly. It's about building a completely borderless digital economy. Look at the financial scale detailed in the Techin report. SpaceX has invested roughly $10 billion into this constellation, but their projected revenue by 2028 is $15 billion annually.
Wow, $15 billion a year.
Yeah. They are securing the core communications backbone for remote communities, emergency services, global shipping fleets. The economic incentive to dominate that space is just way too massive to hit the brakes now.
And apparently, it's not just internet either. On the exact same night as that Starlink launch, SpaceX sent up a massive satellite for SiriusXM, the SXM-11.
Yeah, that thing is a behemoth.
Built by Intuitive Machines, right?
Huh.
It weighs 7.5 tons and it's 230 feet tall. And my first thought reading that was, satellite radio? Seriously, like, who is dropping $500 million on satellite radio infrastructure when everyone listening to this right now can just stream Spotify or Apple Music?
It does seem completely counterintuitive at first, but you have to look at the mechanics of how data actually reaches your phone. Streaming relies entirely on terrestrial cell towers.
Right.
You drive behind a mountain, or say you go into rural Alaska, and the streaming just stops because radio waves from a cell tower cannot punch through miles of solid rock.
So SiriusXM is playing defense, basically.
Exactly. They are going on a massive infrastructure offensive. They are trying to conquer the geographical dead zones where streaming simply fails.
But how does one satellite fix Alaska? I mean, if you've ever driven up there, satellite radio coverage has historically been a total coin toss because the satellite is just so low on the horizon.
And that is where the technical upgrade actually comes in. Standard satellites function a bit like a floodlight. They sit over the equator and they shine this broad, kind of weak beam over a huge portion of the Earth.
Just covering as much area as possible.
Right. But by the time that signal reaches the extreme geographical angles of Alaska, it has to pass through so much atmosphere and at such a harsh angle that the signal just degrades. The SXM-11, though, uses advanced spot beam technology.
Spot beam, okay.
Yeah. Instead of a floodlight, think of it as a highly focused, high-powered laser pointer. It concentrates a massive amount of energy into these tight, specific beams aimed directly at those tricky northern latitudes.
Oh, so it just burns right through the atmospheric interference.
Precisely. By investing $500 million into that specific mechanical upgrade, they can deliver CD quality audio to areas with literally zero cell service.
That's wild.
It is. They maintain their 34 million subscribers by ensuring that when your phone loses its signal on a road trip, their service is the only one that's still working perfectly.
Okay, so we have this massive orbital communication infrastructure beaming terabytes of data down from space. But all of that connectivity requires processing power on the ground to actually make sense of it, which leads us directly into the mind-bending physical hardware investments happening down here on Earth.
Oh, yeah, this is where the numbers just get silly.
Specifically in South Korea, the scale of what the South Korean government just announced alongside Samsung and SK Hynix is almost difficult to even comprehend.
It really is.
So what does this all mean? They announced an 800 trillion won investment. For context, that is 518 billion US dollars dedicated to building four new semiconductor fabrication plants in the southwest region of the country.
Just staggering amounts of money.
I had to look this up just to contextualize it for you listening. $518 billion is larger than the entire GDP of countries like Nigeria to the Philippines to build four factories.
Four very, very advanced factories, but yes.
The goal is to double DRAM output in 5 years and capture 70% of the global AI memory chip market by 2030. I mean, is it brilliant or is it reckless to bet the equivalent of an entire national economy on a single tech trend holding up?
Well, the tech and analysis actually gives this an incredibly high 70% probability of success. And their confidence really comes down to the underlying physics of artificial intelligence.
Okay, break that down for me.
When we talk about these massive large language models, the bottleneck isn't usually the main processor anymore. It's getting the data to the processor fast enough. AI models require just an astronomical amount of high bandwidth memory, or HBM.
Let me stop you there because we hear words like memory or RAM all the time. What mechanically makes high bandwidth memory different from the standard DRAM I have in my laptop?
Okay, think of standard computer memory, like a single lane bridge trying to handle rush hour traffic. Your processor is this massive city, but the cars, the data can only get in one at a time.
Right, which causes a huge backup.
Exactly. High bandwidth memory is like building a 16-lane multi-level superhighway directly into the center of the city. Physically, they take multiple memory chips and stack them vertically, one on top of the other.
Like a skyscraper of memory.
Yeah. And then they punch microscopic holes straight down through the layers. These are called through-silicon vias to connect them all. This allows the system to move petabytes of data almost instantly, which AI models absolutely require to function without stuttering.
And South Korea is betting they can build those superhighways better than anyone else.
They already dominate this space, honestly. They are pushing the boundaries of physics with 3 nanometer nodes.
3 nanometers.
A nanometer is 1 billionth of a meter. We're talking about etching transistors onto silicon that are only the width of a few dozen atoms. It is arguably the most complex manufacturing process in human history.
That is just hard to wrap your head around.
It is. But if global AI compute demand grows 10 times by 2030 as projected, South Korea essentially positions itself as the OPEC of AI.
The OPEC of AI. I really love that phrasing because it instantly clarifies the power dynamic there. They would control 75 to 80% of the global AI memory supply.
Exactly. They become the absolute gatekeepers.
They become the gatekeepers for the infrastructure of the future. But the risk is still catastrophic, isn't it? Because if there's a sudden breakthrough in compute efficiency that requires far less memory, South Korea is left holding $518 billion worth of empty factories.
Yeah, they are building the most expensive, highly specialized highway system in history, just hoping the cars keep coming.
They really are. Okay. But South Korea is focused on the physical hardware. The actual software the AI models demanding all this memory is currently triggering a full-blown international crisis.
It's getting very messy very quickly.
Now, before we get into this next segment, I want to be crystal clear with you listening. We are going to discuss United States and China AI developments alongside government export controls. We are remaining strictly impartial here.
Absolutely.
We are not taking sides, and we are not endorsing any political viewpoint whatsoever. We are simply reporting the timeline and the dynamics exactly as they are presented in the Tech and Morning source material.
And that timeline fundamentally breaks the traditional concept of technological containment.
Okay, here is what happened. On June 12, 2026, the U.S. government restricted global access to Anthropic's Mythos 5 model. They cited national security, specifically around the model's advanced capability to detect cybersecurity vulnerabilities.
You wanted to keep it completely locked down.
Right. But just one day later, on June 13th, China's Zipu AI released GLM 5.2. Independent researchers tested it and confirmed that GLM 5.2 matches Mythos perfectly in those exact vulnerability detection benchmarks. The capability gap was closed in literally 24 hours.
Which is just a stunning turnaround.
But here is the massive difference. Mythos was locked behind an API, but GLM 5.2 is an open weight model.
And this raises an important question about whether export controls can even exist in the AI era.
Right. Because you read this and the absurdity of traditional regulation just jumps out at you. It is like a record label trying to ban a song from the radio after the MP3 is already leaked online.
Yeah, the cat is out of the bag.
You cannot embargo a file that everyone has already downloaded to their own hard drive. The U.S. Commerce Secretary, Howard Lutnick, actually partially reversed course a couple of weeks later on June 26th, allowing about 100 vetted U.S. entities back into Mythos with heavy safeguards. But the damage to the containment strategy was totally done.
Let's break down why open weight changes everything mechanically. When the U.S. blocked Mythos 5, they were blocking an API and application programming interface.
Right, which means what exactly for the user?
That means the AI lives on Anthropic's massive servers, and users just send questions over the internet and get answers back. The government can easily tell Anthropic to simply shut off access to certain IP addresses.
It's like turning off the water valve at the main city supply.
Exactly. But an open weight model like GLM 5.2 is entirely different. The weights are basically the mathematical connections the digital brain of the AI after it has already absorbed billions of data points.
Oh, yeah.
When China released GLM 5.2 as open weight, they basically posted the fully trained digital brain on the internet for anyone to download. You don't need a massive multi-billion dollar supercomputer to run it anymore. The Tekken Report notes it can run on a standard H100 GPU.
And an H100 is an extremely high-end graphics card, sure, but it's something a dedicated researcher or, like, a medium-sized company can absolutely get their hands on. It sits locally on their desk.
Yes. There is no central server to shut down. As the security analyst from Let Data Science noted in the report, the genie is out of the bottle, and this creates a terrifying double-edged sword for global cybersecurity.
Because both sides have it now.
Right. On one hand, defensive security teams can download this model, point it at their own company's code, and instantly find hidden bugs.
But state-sponsored hackers and ransomware syndicates can download that exact same model, point it at a bank's code, and find the vulnerabilities just as fast.
It completely compresses the timeline. Historically, when software was released, defenders had months to patch vulnerabilities before hackers found them. Now that window is reduced to weeks or even days.
That's terrifying.
And looking at the macro geopolitical race, 2 years ago, analysts assumed China was 12 to 18 months behind the U.S. in AI because they didn't have access to the newest training chips.
Right. The hardware embargoes.
Exactly. But this open weight release proves they are adapting their software training techniques to completely bypass those hardware embargoes. They are closing the capability gap in targeted domains to mere days.
Okay, let's step away from the software battles happening between global superpowers for a minute and look at a battleground that might feel a bit more familiar to you. We're going to look at how these exact same principles, infrastructure, hardware ecosystems, and dominance play out right in your living room.
Oh, we are talking about the console wars.
The console wars. Because the data coming out of the gaming industry is completely lopsided right now. Industry analyst Chris Drang revealed that for AAA single-player games, you know, those massive, big-budget cinematic titles, the PlayStation 5 is capturing 75 to 80% of sales at launch compared to the Xbox Series X and S.
And you really have to look at the physical hardware base to understand why that number is so shocking. Currently, the install base sits at roughly 93 million units for the PS5 and about 35 million for the Xbox.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Just doing the raw math, PlayStation has roughly 2.6 times the number of consoles in homes.
Right.
But they're capturing 4 times the single-player game sales. The math doesn't scale linearly. It's totally disproportionate. We know Xbox has Game Pass, where you pay like $17 a month for access to hundreds of games.
Which is an amazing deal, honestly.
It's a great value. But if PlayStation has positioned itself as the prestige, HBO-level destination where people actually buy big narrative games at full price, is Xbox just resigning itself to being the bargain bin? Are they just locked out of the premium market?
Well, what's fascinating here is how brand identity actually alters software development. Sony spent 2 decades building an ecosystem around games like God of War, Spider-Man, and The Last of Us.
The heavy hitters?
Yeah. They trained the consumer to believe that if you want a massive cinematic single-player experience, you buy a PlayStation. But more importantly, they trained the developers.
Wait, how does consumer perception change how a developer writes code?
Well, imagine you are a third-party studio building a massive single-player game. You know, mathematically, that 80% of your launch sales are going to happen on the PS5. Where do you dedicate your optimization budget?
Oh, I see.
Right. If you have to choose between fine-tuning the frame rate for the Xbox or ensuring it runs flawlessly on the PS5's specific custom architecture, you choose the PS5. You focus your quality assurance testing there.
So the game actually runs better on PlayStation.
Exactly. Which makes consumers even more likely to buy it there. It is a self-reinforcing infrastructure loop that Microsoft simply cannot break with hardware sales alone. Which is exactly why they pivoted so heavily to buying entire publishers like Activision Blizzard to force people into their subscription ecosystem.
And you see the power of building an infrastructure that demands deep engagement when you look at the fighting game community, too.
Yeah.
While Sony and Microsoft are fighting over market share, the fighting game world just wrapped up its massive EVO 2026 tournament in Las Vegas. Over 15,000 in-person attendees and 800,000 concurrent viewers online.
The announcements from that tournament really highlight why this specific genre has such incredible staying power compared to massive trends like Battle Royale.
Oh yeah, people were so hyped. Bandai Namco announced that Bob is returning to Tekken 8 on August 19th Early Access. If you don't play Tekken, Bob is famous for his speed and weight style. He's this massive heavyweight character who moves with the agility of a middleweight.
A nightmare to fight against.
Totally. And Arc System Works announced Loki as the first DLC character for Marvel Toucan.
And to understand why a single character release pulls in 800,000 viewers, you have to look at the mechanical depth of fighting games. To master a character like Bob, you have to understand mix-ups, the psychological chess match of forcing your opponent to guess whether you will attack high or low in a fraction of a second.
It's intense.
Or to play Loki in Marvel Toucan, you have to master illusion-based mechanics and trickery. This isn't a game you just pick up and casually play for 20 minutes.
No, it requires thousands of hours of muscle memory.
And that level of commitment requires flawless digital infrastructure, specifically rollback netcode. Fighting games operate in frames, fractions of a second. If you are playing online and there is a tiny spike of internet lag, the entire match is ruined.
Which used to happen all the time.
All the time. Rollback netcode solves this by actually having the game engine predict what your opponent is going to do next. If it predicts correctly, the game plays perfectly smooth. If the opponent does something unexpected, the game instantly rolls back time by a few milliseconds and corrects the visual state.
That is just brilliant programming.
It is an incredibly complex back-end infrastructure that basically hides internet lag from the players.
So whether you are Sony selling a 93 million strong hardware ecosystem or Bandai Namco building the rollback netcode infrastructure to keep players locked into Tekken 8 for years, success comes from cultivating an environment that rewards deep sustained engagement.
Exactly. You build the superior infrastructure, and the users will essentially lock themselves inside your ecosystem.
Okay, let's pull all of this together, because the through line today across all these sources is just staggering. We started in orbit, with SpaceX managing 10,700 active Starlink satellites, fundamentally rewriting global connectivity.
Right, and we saw how SiriusXM is using targeted spot beam physics to overcome massive geographical hurdles in Alaska.
Then we came back down to Earth to look at the physical foundation required to process all that data. South Korea is making a $500 billion gamble, building multi-lane microscopic superhighways, high-bandwidth memory, to corner the infrastructure of the AI revolution.
Which powers the uncontainable open-weight AI models like China's GLM 5.2 that are currently breaking traditional geopolitical export controls because, well, once a digital brain is downloaded, it simply can't be put back in the box.
And finally, we saw how that same principle of infrastructural dominance plays out in our living rooms. PlayStation's massive 93 million install base forces developers to optimize for their hardware, creating a self-reinforcing loop that dictates the economics of the entire single-player gaming industry.
It really is all deeply connected.
The pace of technological change is accelerating, and it is rapidly consolidating into these massive power blocks. And why should you, listening to this right now, care? Because this invisible infrastructure dictates everything. It dictates the reliability of the internet you use to connect with your family. It dictates the security of your personal data against state-sponsored cyber threats. And it dictates the hardware sitting under your TV and the games you are able to play on it.
Yeah. And looking at the sheer scale of investment required to maintain these systems, it leaves us with a fascinating and, frankly, a bit of a chilling thought to end on.
Lay it on us.
If South Korea successfully becomes the OPEC of AI by cornering the microscopic silicon market for high bandwidth memory, and if the AI models themselves become completely uncontainable because open-weight digital brains can be downloaded by anyone, will the next major global conflicts be fought not over physical land or oil or water, but over access to high bandwidth memory fabs and satellite orbital slots?
Wow. High bandwidth memory and orbital airspace as the new oil. That is a heavy one to chew on. Something to deeply consider the next time you look up at the night sky or, you know, the next time you boot up your console. We want to thank you for joining us today and diving into the deep end of the Tech and Morning sources. Stay curious. Keep questioning the infrastructure being built around you. And we will catch you on the next deep dive.